greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Storytime when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values were based upon individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We're taught to covet our neighbor's property, and then we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures, and we call those Federal Reserve notes. We practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods, and we call that government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We now pay up to 74% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes that are owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. And the average family of four in this country has a $70,000 consumer debt. We now have a $9 trillion national debt. We're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. We call those derivatives. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And then we live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we call all of that prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational and entertaining. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about stories. Stories in the Bible are called parables. There's quite a few of them. I don't know how many, but there's probably 50 or 75 parables in the New Testament, maybe more. And then there's a whole book called the Book of Proverbs. And proverbs are little, short, wise old sayings. Just some, in some cases, you know, they may be a sentence. In some cases, they may be a verse or two long. And they're designed to teach through revelation. We've been talking about revelation versus experimentation. Now, the house of Israel, the Israelite peoples, the Anglo-Saxon peoples of the world, of which, you know, there's quite a bunch of us, we believe with a passion in the scientific modality of education, of learning. And that's where we experiment. We take it in the laboratory and we experiment with it. It actually got started with Adam and Eve in the garden. They had a revelation. Their creator, the God of the Bible, the creator of the universe, the creator of the world, the creator of Adam and Eve. And he told them about a tree. There was a particular tree in this garden. And he said, don't eat off that tree. That's a bad one. And you see, Adam and Eve didn't have any way of knowing that that tree was bad for them. I mean, they just recently came on the scene. They hadn't been around. They didn't invent the tree. They didn't create it. They had not seen the results from eating off of the tree. They didn't have a textbook from, you know, a historical textbook to explain to them how prior generations had eaten off the tree and all died. And so God came along and gave them a revelation. Now, the revelation, remember, is the best way to learn. You learn from revelation. You learn from other people's experience. Now, the other guy could have learned through experimentation. That's the way we deal with explosives. You see, we put a guy in the army, and then we're going to teach him about explosives. We don't just hand him a bunch of explosives and caps and say, why don't you go out there and experiment with these and see how it comes out. See what you can learn. We teach him from revelation. We teach him from the experience of other people that have already blown themselves up. And then we warn him. We say, don't do that, you know, because if you do that, you're likely to kill yourself. So you gotta be careful. And so when we teach our children how to cross the street, we don't teach by experimentation. We teach by revelation. And my mother, when she was teaching me how to cross the street, she said, you hold my hand. Look both ways before you cross the street. You walk in that crosswalk. And so she didn't want me experimenting, you know, just walking out into the street to find out, you know, do these cars really hurt when they run over you? Can you miss them? Can they miss you? Can they stop in time? You know, these are all experiments that other people have done in times past, and sometimes they got killed and caused hard feelings and caused heartache. And so my mother wanted to teach me how to cross the street by revelation. But primarily, human beings have a bent toward learning and reinventing the wheel, learning from experimentation. And so, in the Bible, there's a story here that I wanted to share with you today. It's called the Korah story. It's in Numbers chapter 16. It has to do with politics. And we haven't learned much from politics. And we keep voting these same guys back into office, you know. Whatever your complaint is, I mean, let's suppose that you're complaining about the public school system. Hell, nothing's changed in the public school system over 50 years except that it's gotten worse and worse. So, if you thought you were going to vote Barack Obama into office and he's going to teach Johnny to read, maybe we should look at the history of politics and public education and see, well, how has it worked in the past? Hillary Clinton wants to give us national health care insurance. Has anybody ever looked into the Bible to see what God thought about national health care insurance? Or does he even care? Is God concerned at all about your health and health care insurance and the affordability of a hospital stay? You know, has anybody ever thought about that? I've never heard a preacher ever say anything about national health care insurance from the perspective of the Bible. They all have opinions. In fact, there's a couple of religious guys running for president this time. Mike Huckabee from Arkansas, he's the former governor down there. He's a pretty sharp guy. I live right next to Arkansas, so we listen to or we watch public television out of Arkansas. It's AETN. And he's been on TV quite a few times. He's very articulate. He's a Baptist preacher. And I don't know if he has a health care program or not, but he's currently leading in the polls up in Iowa as I speak, and he's pretty knowledgeable, you'd think, you know, about the Bible and about what God thinks. And then we got a Mormon guy running. His name is Mitt Romney, and he's running for president. I don't know what his national health care insurance program is about. I haven't heard much about that, but we got these religious guys running, and you'd think, you know, if they were religious and knowledgeable about the Bible, they might say, hey, Hillary, here's what the Bible says about national health care insurance. Hey, Barack Obama, here's what the Bible says about that. And these are kind of neat, interesting stories, because what does God think about politics? Is God concerned about the political atmosphere here in the United States? Is God concerned, you know, the Creator God, is he concerned about the Iranians developing nuclear weapons, or does he care much about George Bush and the war in Iraq? And what does he have to say about some of these things that we get really excited about and really visceral about over politics? And the answer to that is yes. Absolutely. And there's a story here in Numbers chapter 16, which has to do with democracy. In fact, this is the first recorded story in the Bible about democratic rule, democratic institutions. And there was a fellow by the name of Korah. And this is after the Israelites, after mom and dad left Egypt. And now they're out in the wilderness. And Moses is going up to the mountain, and he's talking to God, and he comes down with the Ten Commandments, and things are going along pretty good. And Moses is kind of the chief representative of the people. And Korah and 250 other guys came up to Moses one day, and they said, "Hey, we think you take too much upon yourself, seeing as how we're all holy people. I mean, you know, we've all got... we've all got a stake in this. And we think that there should be a power-sharing arrangement here, kind of like Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats on one side, and then Mitch McConnell and the Republicans on the other side. You know, there's a loyal opposition. You know, you got to have a president. You got to have representatives, you know, and the people have to be represented in all of this. And then what did God think about this power-sharing arrangement?" And so the story is recorded here in Numbers chapter 16. If you got a Bible, go pick it up and follow along. It's an instructive story. It's very interesting. "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and on, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men." All right, so this guy Korah is a Frenchman, the sons of Reuben. And today the Reubenites are located in France, and they're one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So if you're a French person, you know, if you're up in Canada or you're over in France listening to this program over here, this is speaking of you. And it was a Frenchman that jumped up, and he said, "Now listen, we want democratic institutions. We want a power-sharing program here." "And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown." These were the Ted Kennedys and the Dianne Feinsteins and Barbara Boxers and the people who were the political leaders. They were the men of renown, people who were somebody. You know, the wealthy people in the society, guys like Bill Gates, you know, Warren Buffett. In verse 3, "They gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and they said unto them, 'You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Eternal is among them. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Eternal?' And, you know, they challenged Moses. They came up against Moses, just like Nancy Pelosi comes up against George Bush. And she tries to assert, you know, the loyal opposition. "Hey, look, here's our policies. You know, give us a listen." Well, when Moses heard this, Moses, now, you know, he's like a dictator. He doesn't have any democratic opposition. You know, he just goes up and gets the word from God, comes down, says, "Okay, this is the way it is. There isn't any Congress. There isn't any Supreme Court. Moses is acting kind of like the president, and he's getting all of his information directly from God. There's no democratic process going on here." And Korah and the 250 princes of Israel, you know, they're just fed up. And so question arises, well, what does God think about this? You know, what ultimately is the outcome going to be? Well, in verse 4, "Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he spake unto Korah and unto all the company, saying, 'Even tomorrow The Lord will show who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him, even him whom he has chosen will he cause to come near unto him. So Moses was shocked by this behavior. He had been the leader. He was selected by God. And he had heard about this democracy. You see, Moses, if you think about it now for a moment, was raised in the house of Pharaoh in Egypt. Remember Moses back in the book of Exodus, chapter 1, 2, 3, 4. Moses, remember, there was an edict that went out to kill all the male children. Moses, being a male, of course, was supposed to be killed. And his mother hid him in a little basket and floated it down the river. And the princess, the Pharaoh's daughter, saw this, or the Pharaoh's sister, I guess it was, saw this this basket. And there was a baby in it. And she took the baby and raised that baby as her own. And Moses wasn't an Egyptian. He was a Hebrew, and he was raised in Pharaoh's house. So Moses was raised as a monarch. And monarchs are dictators. In case you hadn't thought about that for a moment, they're dictators. They don't go to Parliament. They don't go to Nancy Pelosi and strike a deal, you know, and negotiate. They just, this is the way it's going to be. And if you give me any static, you know, I'm going to kill you. So Moses had been raised as an autocrat. And all of a sudden, you know, here comes this Korah guy along there with this democratic concept of power sharing. So Moses now says to Korah, well, let's go ask God what he thinks about this. And so God's going to give an answer here. You'll see as we go along. In verse 5, he spoke unto Korah and unto all the company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his and who is holy. In verse 6, this do, take you censers, Korah and all of his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Eternal tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Eternal, this is God now, chooses, he shall be holy. You take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. And Moses said unto Korah, here I pray you, you sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Eternal and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. Now, if you'll think about it now for a moment, the tribe of Levi was separated out, and today we call it the civil service. The civil service people are the people who serve in the governmental apparatus. You know, they're the people that fix the potholes and the roads, and they deliver the mail, and they're the policemen and the firemen and so on. So the tribe of Israel, or the tribe of Levi in the nation of Israel, had been selected by God. And had nothing to do, you know, with civil service examinations. You were either born a Levite or you weren't. See, you could picture it this way. It was kind of racial or genetic. You know, you could say all the black people of America will be the civil servants, and everybody else will be served by the blacks. And that means then the blacks, all the police would be black, all the firemen would be black, all the mayors and city councils would be black. See, it would be a matter of race. You'd just be born into the job, just kind of like being the son of Prince Charles. You're just born to be the king. And that's the way this deal was set up. It didn't have anything to do with civil service examinations and so on. And so he went on, verse 10, and he has brought you near to him and all of your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you, and seek you also the priesthood also. So Moses is asking Levi, now, you know, we've given you the civil service. Now do you seek the political reins of power also? You're not satisfied with what you've got. You're not satisfied with being the chief of police. You want to be the mayor. I guess this is where we get the idea of upward mobility. You know, typically in America today, politicians, you know, like Chuck Schumer, for instance, he was a representative from New York for many years. And Chuck Schumer later ran for the Senate. Now he's a senator from New York. That's upward mobility. One of these days, he probably aspires to being the president of the United States. And one of these days, he'll probably run for president of the United States. That's what Hillary Clinton has done. You know, she went from first lady to senator, and now she wants to be president. Well, I guess that's what Cora must have had in mind. In verse 11, for which cause both you and all of the company are gathered together against the Eternal. And what is Aaron that you murmur against him? You know, what's your bitch against Aaron? What's he done to you? Well, in verse 12, Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, we will not come up. In verse 13, is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey, that's Egypt, to kill us in the wilderness, except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey. You have not given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And Moses was very angry. And he said unto the Eternal, respect not their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, and neither have I hurt one of them. And Moses said unto Korah, be thou and all of your company before the Eternal, you and they and Aaron tomorrow. And take every man his censer, and put incense in them, and bring you before the Eternal every man his censer, 250 censers, you also and Aaron each of you his censer. And they took every man his censer, and put fire in them, and laid incense thereon, and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. Now, picture this now. Here's the 250 princes of Korah. They're actually the princes of Israel, the men of renown, the Bill Gateses and Warren Buffetts, the Nancy Pelosis and Chuck Schumers and so on. And they say, hey, Moses, you know, you're acting like a dictator, a little petty dictator over here. Moses says, listen, I haven't taken anything from you people. I'm just following instructions, you know, as I get it from God. And then this Abiram guy over here, he says, now listen, you know, you made some campaign promises, Moses. You're out here promising to take us out of Egypt to a land of milk and honey. You're promising to give us, you know, fields and watered brooks and streams and nice farms, you know, like upstate New York. And here we are out in the desert, and you haven't fulfilled your campaign promises. And therefore, we're really bummed out about that. And we want to change. Politicians do that to this day. You know, they're always out here promising you the moon. Hillary is promising national health care insurance. And George Bush, you know, he made some promises. You know, he said he's going to balance the budget. He's a fiscal conservative, you know, in one thing and another. And then when he got into office, you know, it was something else again, wasn't it? So politicians, you know, have been reneging on their campaign promises. They promise you the moon, then they don't deliver. And that's what they were accusing Moses of. Of course, these guys kind of conveniently forget that when they got out into the wilderness, they were sentenced to 40 years in the wilderness because they wouldn't go up to conquer the land. You know, remember they murmured and said, we want to go back to Egypt, and Moses, you brought us out here to kill us by taking us to war against these Anakims and so on. See, they kind of forget, you know, that they had their opportunity to leave Egypt and go right straight into the promised land, and then they wouldn't do it. And so God, you know, got a little uptight about it. You know, he does that. He gets a little uptight and goes ballistic sometimes and goes postal once in a while. Sometimes he just gets ticked off and says, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. So anyway, that's where that story's at. So, the Eternal, this is verse 29, the Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron, saying, you separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation? So, God, at this point here, just take a look here, verse 20, 21, 22, you know, the Creator God. Now, he's not too happy with this power-sharing arrangement that's being proposed by Korah. He doesn't seem to be too excited about it. In fact, he tells Moses and Aaron, you two guys, you separate yourself, and I will kill 3.5 million people. He's just on the verge of going postal on them. And Moses falls on his face and says, well, God, just because one guy over here, you know, is getting a little uppity, are you going to kill everybody for that? And right away, you know, we're starting to get the drift of where this thing is going. I would predict, just by reading verses 20, 21, and 22, that this power-sharing arrangement here is headed toward some real problems. I don't think this thing is going to work. So in verse 23, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, well, speak unto the congregation, and you tell them, get up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So Moses rose up, and he went into Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke unto the congregation, and he said, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all of their sins. So the congregation got up from the tabernacle of Korah and Dathan and Abiram on every side, and Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door. They stood in the door of their tents with their wives and with their sons and their little children. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all of these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. So Moses is telling him, listen, this isn't my idea. I did not come to you people in Egypt and say, follow me into the promised land. I came to you and I said, listen, I'm here sent by God Almighty himself to tell you that he wants to lead you into this promised land. I mean, if you'll think now for a moment, you know, Moses, you know, he didn't think this thing up. He's just following instructions. Moses was always following the instructions that he got from God, starting at the burning bush. That was when he first came into contact with this God, this living God. Moses was raised in Egypt. He was a worshiper of all of the gods of Egypt. You know, he was pretty knowledgeable in all the wisdom of Egypt. At the burning bush, you know, he knew, you know, that he had been a Hebrew. I mean, you know, he knew that because he'd found that out when he was in Egypt. When he was cast out of Egypt, remember, he had tried to help those slaves over there. He knew where his roots were. But he was, you know, today we would say, well, he was a Roman Catholic. And then he came to the burning bush story, you know, and then he found out that, hey, wait a minute, there was a little bit more to the story. So he was following God's instructions here. So it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, you know, that Moses now is issuing a little prophet over here. He warned the people to get away from him. Moses said, hereby you shall know that God has sent me to do all of these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. He said, if these men die the common death of all men, and if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. If these guys live to die of old age, God has not sent me. But if the Eternal makes a new thing, and if the earth opens her mouth and swallows them up with all that appertains unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Eternal. All right, so here's the test. We're going to have an election, and God is going to cast the deciding votes. So here was a great opportunity, you know, for Moses and God. They could have gone to the congregation and said, hey, listen, we've got a political controversy over here, and let's open up this issue to the vote of the people. Let's have an election. But instead of doing that, Moses told the people, get away from these politicians over here as far as you can get. And the people did that. By and large, the people left these politicians. And God said, now here we're going to have an election. And Moses goes to all these people and says, okay, now if the earth opens up and swallows these men up, and they go down into the pit, and they die suddenly, you'll know that God has has cast his vote in this matter. If these men, if this doesn't happen now, and if these guys go on living their lives and they die the common death of all men, if they just die of old age, then you'll know that God has not sent me. So Moses is staking now his status, his prestige. He is going to spend all of his political capital on this one event. How is God going to vote on the Korah issue? We'll break right here, and I'll give you a reminder. And then we'll come back and find out how the vote comes out right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or management or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the law or an editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're covering story time. And the purpose now for these stories here in the Bible, the Messiah himself, Jesus, you know, he made an observation a couple of times in the New Testament. And he said that we should learn from all of these examples in the past. His admonition was learn from Revelation. Now, here's a political experiment. Here's a bunch of people that are getting together, and they say what we need is a power-sharing device. What we need is a political reformation here in Israel. We got this dictatorial government coming from Moses and Aaron, who have taken too much power upon themselves. And what we need is a loyal opposition. You know, we need a democratic party. That's why, as I've said, you know, time and time again, Moses was a Republican. And here comes this democratic loyal opposition over here, democratic though it may be. Moses got the information from God, and he said, now, if the ground opens up and swallows these guys and they die suddenly, then you'll know that God has voted and made the decision. So this is really a vote by God Almighty. It's not a vote from the congregation. And Moses had God decided that he wanted, you know, to have a democratic format here. He could have said, well, listen, let's see what the people have to say about this. A little later on, we'll take a look in 1 Samuel chapter 8 about this democratic process. This doesn't end it. You know, we've had this political confrontation with our Creator more than once. All right, so now we're up here to verse 31. You know, it came to pass, and here comes the vote. It came to pass, as he made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder and was under them. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up in their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all of their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Eternal and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. Did you catch that? Let's go over this election one more time. The election results are recorded in Numbers chapter 16, verse 31 through 35. Here's the results of the election. You know, the news media, they get very excited, you know, when the election is completed and the polls close. And they're making projections. And they're trying to get to the latest returns just as rapidly as possible. Well, in this election, when God chose Moses and Aaron over Korah and Abiram, everybody was standing right there watching the election returns. They were watching democracy in action. Listen to this again. It came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them. The earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up. It swallowed up their houses and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all of their goods. All of the people who had joined the democratic loyal opposition and all of their goods, that is, all of their donkeys and camels and cattle and sheep, all of their tents, all of their furniture, their wives, their little babies nursing on their mother's breasts, went down into the pit, and they were all killed. Right in full view of 3.5 million people. And the people, when they saw it, were just terrified. Now, you talk about a terrorist now. This God is a terrorist. He did it right in front of everybody. He didn't hide it from anyone. You know, today, you know, when they're going to execute somebody, they hide him away in a prison so that nobody can see it. Not this guy. Now, he didn't go postal and kill everybody in the congregation. He just took all the people that were disloyal to him and Moses and killed them all. Verse 36, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, that he take up the censers out of the burning, and scatter you the fire yonder, for they're hallowed. Now remember, there were 250. There was Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Ted Kennedy and Chuck Schumer and, you know, all the men of renown. They all had their censers in their hands. Lightning comes down out of heaven. A fire comes down out of heaven and consumes them all. I'm not convinced that the creator of the universe is enthralled by democratic process. I think he's a dictator. That's the way kings are, you know. They are, in fact, dictators. They take the place of the Congress. They take the place of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And this, of course, does not fly well with Americans, because Americans are very, very democratically attuned. We believe in the democratic process. I thought I would share this story with you because this is election time. 2008, you know, we're going to select a new president. When God selected Moses, we didn't go through any Iowa caucuses or any early round presidential nominating votes or any Democratic or Republican conventions. When God selected Moses, he picked Moses from the day he was born. He personally intervened in Moses' life and had him put into a basket, sent down the river, raised by Pharaoh's sister, raised in all the ways of Egypt. He became a prince. He was cast out of Egypt. When he was 80 years old, there was a burning bush, and God revealed himself, said, "Hey, Moses, come on over here. I've got a job for you. I've got a program over here." Korah comes along and says, "Hey, we're not satisfied with this Moses guy. We want Nancy Pelosi." So now here's what God thought of that, and I just thought I'd share it with you. This God, this creator of the universe, this is a different God. This guy is not into the democratic political process. He's very, very concerned about political process, but only insofar as he's the absolute dictator. And I just thought I'd share that with you. Now it goes on a little bit further here. He says, "Now the censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Eternal. Therefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers, whereof that they were burned, had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger, which is not of the seed of Aaron, come near to offer incense before the Eternal. And he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Lord said unto him by the hand of Moses." All right, now there's a statute here that tells us that no stranger can come up to God. Only a Levitical priest, only a son of Aaron in this case. He has to be a Levite, number one. But he also has to be a descendant of Aaron, an Aaronic priest. Well, that kind of leaves out most of us. This is heretical. It's kind of like being, you know, the king of England. I mean, you know, the average Joe Sixpack over there does not run for some kind of political office to become the king of England. You are born to that office. That's just the way it is. And of course, over here in America, we laugh at you Englishmen. You know, we sit over here and we go, "God, those Englishmen are dumb. Why, they got that crazy king over there and queen, you know." We'll talk about that in 1 Samuel chapter 8. You know, after this political experiment here didn't work, the people, a little later on, about 350 years later, they came to Samuel, who happened to be the high priest at the time. And they said, "We want a king like all the nations around us." That wasn't another one of our brighter political moves in the history of our nation. But, you know, it was a political move, and we're bound to that political move to this day. I mean, you Englishmen over there have Queen Elizabeth to this day because of what happened in 1 Samuel chapter 8. But there's more to the Korah story. I mean, we haven't gotten all of it yet. We're just a little bit more to go here. So they made these broad plates, and they took all these 250 censers out here, and they took the metal out of them. And this was strange fire offered to the Eternal. So God said, "Now this is hallowed now. This is very special. Take that and beat it, put it over the altar." And they did. And he said, "From now on, this is a memorial. This is a lesson for you people to learn from. This is scientific experimentation that we are going to use to teach by revelation every future generation. And that's what I'm doing here today. I'm sharing with you this revelation that you'd probably never heard before concerning the democratic process." Now, most Americans believe in democracy. They believe in the democratic process. I wanted to share with you that the creator of the universe, the guy that wrote this Bible, the guy that gave us the Ten Commandments, he does not believe in democracy. I think you can see that right now. So if you've got it in your mind that you're going to vote for Hillary because you want national health care insurance, or you're going to vote for Mitt Romney because you're a Mormon, or you're going to vote for Mike Huckabee because he's pro-life, or, you know, you're going to vote for, maybe you're going to vote for Ron Paul because he's a fiscal conservative or something like that, that this democratic process is something that's foreign and alien to the scripture. and that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob doesn't approve of it. In fact, he has a very strong disapproval rating as it relates to political process. Very, very strong political bias against democratic processes. Now, I know that probably is a strange concept for most Americans and most Western Anglo-Saxons, but I thought I'd share that with you so that in the upcoming election, it'll maybe help you in your voting selection. All right, now in verse 41, "But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, 'You've killed the people of the Lord.'" Did you get this? The very next day, after they had seen all of this event transpire, I mean, it wasn't something done back over here in the inner sanctum of a prison where an execution took place. This was an execution. 250 of the best and the brightest of the politicians and the business people of the House of Israel, of the community, had all been killed, along with their wives and their children, and their donkeys and their asses and their furniture and everything that appertained unto them. The 250 politicians themselves were killed by a bolt of lightning. It was done in the presence of the entire congregation. 3.5 million people saw it, scared the living hell out of them, and they all fled. The very next day, 24 hours later, here's what the people said. 3.5 million people now. All of the people, on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses. They murmured against Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Eternal. You have killed God's chosen ones." What do you think God thought of that conclusion on the part of the people of Israel? Well, very next verse tells you, in verse 42, "It came to pass when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, and they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, 'Moses, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment.' And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces. And Moses said unto Aaron, 'Take a censer, and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Eternal, from God, from the Lord, and the plague is begun.'" I want you to notice that this is the second time in this chapter where Moses has interceded for all of the nation of Israel. God twice now has said, "Moses, get the hell out of the way, and I'm going to kill them all. I'm going to kill every man, every woman, and every child." And he told Moses, he said, "Hey, listen, I will take you, Moses, and your wife, and your children, and I will raise up a new nation." You know, it grows geometrically. I mean, if you think about it for a moment, this nation of Israel, these 3.5 million people, are the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God says, "We'll just start over. I'm dissatisfied with the offspring that came from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, Moses, you came from Abraham. So I'll just raise up a new nation. I'll kill these 3.5 million, and I'll just use you. You know, it'll take us another 400 or 500 years to do this." And Moses interceded for the second time in this event and said, "Well, God, because of the sins of a few, will you destroy everyone?" I mean, everybody isn't murmuring. You know, there's a bunch out here that are murmuring. There's a bunch of whining Democrats out here, but they're not all doing that. All right, so now here's the rest of that story. So Aaron took as Moses commanded, and he ran into the midst of the congregation, and behold, the plague was begun among the people. And he put on incense, and he made an atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living. And the plague was stayed. So a plague now came down upon the entire congregation. I don't know exactly what this plague was, but picture this now. The 250 politicians are all killed by a lightning bolt out of heaven. All of their families, their wives, their children, and their immediate families are all killed by going down into a hole in the ground, and it closed up over the top of them. Then the people come back and they say, "Listen, Moses, you did this. You, Moses, you have killed God's chosen people." I mean, these people are suffering from the terminal stupids, aren't they? I mean, these people don't believe their own eyeballs, do they? Hey, people aren't any different today. People, if you saw God Himself do these things, you'd blame it on something, and you would defend Roman Catholicism. All of you Roman Catholics, you would defend the Baptist Church or your Baptist faith, whatever your religious ideology is. I mean, you couldn't learn from that any more than those people could. Now, of course, you're sitting there saying, "Oh, yes, I would. If I saw that, boy, I would learn." I doubt it. These people didn't learn. As you go through the Bible, this goes on time after time after time. Moses must have interceded at least 10 times for the people of Israel. This is 2 times in this chapter, in this Korah event. But he did this many other times. The only reason that you and I are here today is because Moses interceded for us. Otherwise, you never would have been born. Your great-great-granddaddy would have been killed out there in the wilderness, you know, about 84 generations back. Now, here's the death toll. Now, they that died in the plague were 14,700, besides them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses in the door of the congregation, or the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed. Now, it doesn't say what this plague was. It was probably some kind of disease. You know, they got leprosy, or they got bubonic plague, or I don't know what they got. But whatever this plague was, it killed 14,700, in addition to the 250 princes. And now, just assuming that these 250 princes and all of their families, you know, let's just say 250 times 4, 4 members of each family, that was about 1,000. So at least 1,000 people died in the immediate vicinity of the politicians and their families. Could have been 10 times that, but it was a bunch of people. And then it was done in full view of the entire congregation. I mean, it was sitting there. It was like, you know, watching Super Bowl Sunday, and you got to see the entire event right there, you know, from the 50-yard line. It wasn't something that was hidden away. And then as a result of that, these people now couldn't learn from that. After they had actually seen this election, they could not believe their eyeballs. 24 hours later, they came back and said, "Oh my God, this Moses guy over here, why he's killed the Catholic clergy." Same thing happened over here some years later. There was a prophet by the name of Elijah. And Elijah had a little set too like this. You know, the congregation was sitting around, not the whole nation of Israel, but probably several thousand people. And there was a contest. And at the outset of this contest over here, Elijah had an altar, and he put an offering on it. And fire came down from heaven and consumed his offering. And it also consumed the Baal priests over here, 450 of them, killed them. And do you know what the people said? They blamed Elijah. They said, "Elijah, you have killed the Catholic clergy. You have killed the servants of God." And of course, every time this happens, you know, when God doesn't get to this God, this is a little different God than the average run-of-the-mill God, you know, like Jupiter and Neptune and Mars. This God here, he's a jealous God. This guy tells you very plainly that he's a jealous God. He likes to get credit where credit is due. And so when he commits one of these terrorist acts and goes postal and kills a lot of people, he likes to get credit for that. He really resents it when you give credit to Moses or Elijah or somebody else. And he said so very plainly. And you can see it right here twice. Now, do you believe that Moses called lightning down from heaven and killed those 250 priests? Do you believe that Moses, through his own power, opened the earth and all of these people, 1,000 or more, or 2,000 or 3,000, went down into the earth? Do you believe that Moses caused this plague that killed 14,700 people? Don't you think that it would require some kind of supernatural power, somebody like a god that has more power than Moses, a mere man? You know, just looking back on this historically, as I read this account, I say to myself, doesn't make much sense to me that Moses killed those 14,700. Doesn't make much sense to me that that Moses caused lightning to come down out of heaven and kill Korah and his 250 and all their families. Makes more sense to me that it was God himself that did that. And indeed, that's exactly what Numbers chapter 16 tells you. It was the Creator. It was God himself that actually did the killing. And so there's your first example in the Bible of democratic process, a challenge that's made to the political establishment. In fact, we've been admonished, you know, not to, you should be praying for George Bush. I know it's hard to do. And I'm remiss in this also. I don't pray very hard for George and the neocons. But we have been admonished by God himself to pray for our leaders that they would obey God and keep his commandments. Not that they would put in a surge and win the war in Iraq, but rather that they would obey God and keep his commandments, because it will be better for all of us if George would do that. Or, I mean, President Bush, I guess, not to call him George. So anyway, there's the story, and now you got to see it live and direct. Now, how does this impact upon national health care insurance? It isn't. We're going to have national health care insurance. We're going to have a national identification card. I don't care who's elected president. If Mike Huckabee is elected president, we're going to have a national identification card. And if Ron Paul is elected president, we're going to have national health care insurance. I mean, if Paul doesn't sign it, or if Huckabee isn't in line for it, they'll be assassinated, and then the guy that's vice president will take over. I mean, that's been the history of it. So you can vote for Ron, or you can vote for Mike, or you can vote for Hillary, or you can vote for Obama, but in the final analysis, God's will, in the final analysis, will be done. All right, so there's democracy. I got to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to get one. Just call 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.